Hey folks, bullying in our country has risen to record levels and our kids are being affected. Do you know what to do to help them? It may be the difference between life or death.
The 14-year-old's heartbroken father, Michael Cush, says she died by suicide last week.
Adriana was the most happy, beautiful young lady in the world.
Adriana dying just 2 days after this alleged attack.
Seen in disturbing cell phone video posted online, the high school freshman punched, kicked, and dragged by fellow classmates. She was also hit with a water bottle. Cush says it was a tragic case of meaningless bullying that continued online after.
Getting hit in the face with a water bottle didn't hurt Adriana. What hurt Adriana was the embarrassment and humiliation.
And I want you to focus on that last line. Getting hit with the water bottle didn't hurt Adriana. What did hurt and ultimately take her life was the embarrassment and the humiliation. And I am so thankful that we have Dr. Alex Tsang. She's become part of our family with Lionheart, and just wonderful, wonderful provision in this season. And Dr. Tsang, thank you for joining us again. And I know when we spoke, you had a lot of thoughts about the whole idea of how bullying affects kids and then how do we help them?
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me back, Tim, first of all. And I think this is such an important topic. So I'm glad you invited me so we could just have a discussion about this. Bullying is, it's unique in that there are so many different layers to it. And the father in that quote said it the best. It's not the water bottle, really, that hurt Adriana. There's just so many layers to it. You have the physical aggression, which I think probably causes the least type of wounds. But then you have the emotional, psychological effects, and then the whole idea of cyberbullying and the humiliation and embarrassment is actually what really gets the victims of bullying. That's, I think, the most profound effect it has.
And Dr. Tsang, I'm fascinated because I know you've studied the data, the research on the adolescent brain and the frontal cortex. Talk to us about how this type of event affects a young person.
Yes. Well, it has profound effects. First of all, the studies do show that up to close to 20% of high school students do get at some point bullied on school property.
Wow.
So, when we say on school property, it's not really taking into consideration what goes on 24/7 online, right?
Right.
Online internet is 24/7. There's no off and on switch to it, per se. But the effects, the research is very clear about short-term and long-term effects. But inherently, it does cause depression and anxiety. There are a lot of components in terms of behaviors, even. So you have declining grades because there's school avoidance. You don't want to go to school where your tormentor is. The depression that comes with not only the physical aggression, the taunting, but the profound psychological humiliation is huge. It's huge for anyone, but let's take the adolescent brain. Adolescents in and of themselves are very self-conscious, right? Mm-hmm. This is like why my daughter doesn't want me to say, bye, mommy loves you, when I drop her off, because it is mortifying, right?
Right.
And why is it mortifying is because she has an audience of her peers.
Mm-hmm.
So adolescents are very sensitive to how they are perceived by their peers, sensitive to peer rejection. They are very devastated when they don't get invited to events, that isolation, that type of rejection piece component is huge. So when you have something that not only are you beat up in school, you have witnesses and observers that are witnessing your humiliation, but then that it continues online and people are taunting or some of them, rally against or for the bullies, that's just an ongoing psychological trauma. So you do have the depression, the anxiety, and those, if those are severe enough, can certainly lead to thoughts of suicide.
Wow.
Adolescents are short-term thinkers. They're not thinking. They're very much in the moment with their feelings. They're very here and now. What's happening to me? I'm miserable now. You know,
wow.
They have a hard mm-hmm. time believing in 1 year this may be forgotten because their pain is so great now. And I think that's where you become more at risk to suicide. You just want your immediate pain to go away.
Wow, that's so insightful. And you know, as I hear you speak, it sounds like their ability to process the deeper emotions isn't fully developed yet.
No.
Talk to me, though, about what you see, because I know you professionally handle a lot of, you know, violence in your current yes. role. Talk to me about what you see in the youth culture as a whole, because maybe I'm just getting old. But, you know, I was raised that if someone was attacking a young girl, that I would have no option but to step in and defend her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're seeing more and more kind of the opposite, that yeah. kids are pulling phones out and recording it. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, at least passive participators. Why do you think that is? And that may be too deep a question, but... Why do you think, what's going on in our country where a precious young girl like her, who really, by all accounts, did nothing to anybody. She was just a sweet, kind child.
She was completely innocent.
Yeah.
Yes. I think there is a shift in the culture of violence in our society as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, you can't go a week, a day without, you know, reading about a mass shooting or this and this event. And, you know, generations like us, you know, I grew up in the 70s because I didn't have access to the internet or mm-hmm. unless I watched the, you know, 5 o'clock news, I didn't really know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that exposure. But
right.
kids these days have that constant exposure. And then even some things are even glorified. You look at documentary series, which are fascinating in terms of, you know, some of the murder stories, real life, true crime. And it has a place in terms of the learning. But I think sometimes the kids are just watching it as a sensationalized type of fascination with violence. And then you add the video games, you add what's going on in the families. Kids these days have a lot more violent kind of stimulation, but exposure than a
right.
past generation. So you kind of become inoculated where that may not be as big of a deal. You know, you see an event like that video you played, your stomach should be in knots.
Yeah,
you should be feeling sick to your stomach.
Yeah.
Looking at this poor girl. You should. And if you don't, because you've seen much worse in the type of things you watch or even the news, there's a desensitization that happens. But with bullying, there's also a power type of imbalance between the bullying person and the victim too. So I think part of that is, you know, that needs to be discussed. Like what is, you know, how the bully demonstrates dominance, especially in front of a crowd, which is very mm-hmm. reinforcing. Because
yeah.
these are not, bullies are not passive people.
Right.
You know? And part of what they're looking for when they do bully is a visible reaction from the victim, because that just kind of increases their sense of, look what I did, like a power and control type of thing. But then they're banking on the fact that the victim won't tell an adult. You know, the whole culture of secrecy in school is better. That whole concept came up, the culture of silence after Columbine and
wow.
school shootings, where they find out when you do kind of a psychological autopsy that somewhere, somehow, you know, this person knew this piece of information, that person knew a little bit. And we, you know, as a whole, we've gotten better with, if you see something, say something around backpacks in school
mm-hmm.
or school shooting threats. But I think with a concept of bullying, we're not there yet. I think kids don't want to be tattletales or or seen as weak, or, you know, worried that the bully would come retaliate against them. So I think there's still that kind of culture of silence in the school setting that needs to be addressed.
Well, this is powerful, Dr. Singh, because I think a lot of parents are saying, so what do? We take away their phones. They can't be on social media. I think I'm more concerned right now with maybe parents' lack of awareness. Now, in Adriana's case, I think she did go to her father. At least that's what some of the reporting suggests. The school did absolutely nothing until she took her life, and now it's a big deal. I have two friends in major roles in law enforcement, overseeing school security. And one called me last night and said, hey, we've made 8 arrests in our district alone for threats made against the school by students.
Wow.
So we're clearly seeing this marked increase in projected or even real violence. And I guess my question to you is, okay, you know, my child who I love and would die for, you know, comes home and maybe she doesn't, maybe he doesn't want to talk about something, but you know, something's going on. What are some warning signs that as a parent you would want to know? And then talk to me about kind of how they should respond.
That's an excellent question. Yes, let's talk about it. So what are some signs that your child may be being bullied? Mm-hmm. First of all, unexplained injuries. Wow, you know, your child comes home and maybe they got a scratch or a little bruise or something. And again, they might have an explanation that's semi-plausible, but you know your own child, you know. But especially if there's a pattern, you know, 1 week it's one bruise, the other one is scratches. Missing or destroyed items. All of us sudden, they're, you know, stuff you would not necessarily think to look for. But bullying, sometimes before there's physical aggression, there's a lot of destruction, you know, threats. Wow. And bullying, like, give me your phone, give me your lunch, missing money, you know, before it gets to that point.
Wow.
So you want to look at that. You want to look at school avoidance. All of a sudden, your kid is having stomach aches. Oh, I don't want to go to school. I feel sick. A lot of times that stomach ache is a sign of anxiety as well. So you want to have a conversation. Is it really your stomach because it's something you ate, or does your stomach hurt because you're worrying about something? And then, you know, changes in sleep patterns and eating patterns, you know, your child is just different. Hmm. And I think opening those lines of communication is vital. Now, a lot of times the kids don't want to tell
for
several reasons. One, say it's they're being bullied because they sent an image that's potentially either sexual in nature or something. Well, one reason the child's not going to, you know, tell the parent is they don't want the parent to know what they've done, right?
Yeah.
There's that fear. There's a fear of retaliation. If I tell on the person bullying me, I'm even going to get it more. There's embarrassment about it. Like, am I going to be considered weak or be more made fun of that I'm, you know, helpless and bullying? So you have to get all those concepts out on the table, you know, reassure your child that you are in their corner, you will, before you do anything, you'll have a discussion first. Now that does, as a parent, you know, you do reserve the right to override your child when your child says, oh, please don't go.
Right.
You know, but I would have the discussion. Yeah. Look, you know, let's just talk about it now. I'm not going to make a decision right now, but let's talk. I really want to hear.
So
and then
good.
We could maybe, you know, come up with concepts. But if I really feel your safety is in jeopardy, I'm your parent. My biggest job is to protect you and make you feel safe.
Yeah.
So yes, if it's happening at school, you know, you alert school authorities. If it's happening online, there's a lot of forums. I think all the forums have a reporting of offensive behavior. So the cyberbullying, which happens a lot, you know, reporting those posts, taking, before you report them, in the event that they get taken down, screenshot them for your own records.
Good point.
You know, with your cell phone, screenshot, however you want to do it. You want to keep track of time and date and what the content of what was said. And then if it's physical aggression, that's against the law. That's a crime. You know, you can always go to the police too. So depending on the level, you know, there's different things you can do. But the point is to do something because your child needs to feel safe.
Now, that is so wise, such wise, educated information. And, you know, I would add one more thing from the law enforcement perspective. Yes. You know, it used to be that law enforcement took these events very seriously. And I would say in Florida, we still do. In the case I was referring to where they had 8 arrests, those were arrests based on, you know, potentially or not potentially criminal conduct being committed by students by making threats and or bullying and or all the above. So I will say that I'm concerned that in this case, the school officials were callous to this girl's beatdown, because when you looked at the video, the beatdown was horrific. And then there's later video of her injuries.
Yes.
This was as bad a beatdown as you can have. And for what? She did nothing.
It was unprovoked.
That's right. And I just want to encourage parents out here that if that happens to your child and your school officials are complacent, go as public as you can, as quickly as you can. It is time in our country that we stand up and say certain things are no longer tolerable. And one of those things is attacking our innocent children. Absolutely. That's not going to happen. So I'm sorry for the transition.
That's a good point, though, Tim, because going public, if you're getting nowhere, shout it loud. Shout it loud, because that's what may finally, unfortunately, but finally make them enact and do something.
I think you're right. And I think also the public pressure forces a lot of different levels. It first, you know, forces the school administrators to respond, but also law enforcement, but also the judiciary.
Yes.
Because we're losing too many kids to suicide.
Oh, absolutely.
And you find out that many of them, if not most, have been bullied. And that needs to stop. What would you say to the parent who says, well, you know, my child's independent and, you know, she doesn't want to talk to me about, or he doesn't want to talk to me about this stuff. What would you say? What's a good way to have those communications with a teenager? And I know we've all been there, who may or may not necessarily think they need help.
An excellent question. And I have two thoughts on that. One is, your child says, Mom, I'm not talking to you. Dad, I'm not talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's not talk about that, but let's talk about why.
Right.
Are you afraid I'm just going to go and without, again, the power and control? Because if you're a victim of bullying, your power seems to be taken away from you, right?
Yeah.
And here you are as a parent. They are mortified, like, oh, my God, the whole school's going to know. Mom and Dad went. So first of all, ask them why. Because then probably you can reassure them, okay, we can go together. Or, you know, you don't have to be seen walking in with me when I go and talk to administration or something. You can do some problem solving, but I would ask why. And maybe the answer is, oh my God, they're going to get me even more. Okay, that's a valid concern. I am going to make sure that does not happen. So ask why and have a conversation about why. But the other answer is, okay, if you don't want to talk to me, who else can you talk to?
Great point.
If it's not me, who else would you feel? Because I want you to talk about this, okay? And if it's not me, who else? It could be a friend of the family. It could be a school counselor. It could be another trusted adult that is going to take this seriously and do something about it. It can't be, you know, Joe Schmo down the street. So that would be my approach. Find out why, because I think that conversation, 70%, 75%, they'll be like, okay, because you want to kind of, there's a fear. That's a fear-based response. Mm-hmm. They don't want to talk. So talk about what is holding them back.
That's such and good.
And not you, someone else.
Such good insight. And, yeah. And let me ask you, what is the clear line where parents really need to get engaged and say, okay, now it's time for professional help to deal with this? Talk to me about your experience. When do they cross that line?
You know, and that's, I am a believer that any form of bullying should probably just be addressed. Mm-hmm. Because, say, the line isn't that clear. Obviously, any expression of suicidal thoughts, any mm-hmm. signs of depression, mm-hmm. which would be, you know, depressed mood or irritable mood. Mm. And especially in teenagers, sometimes parents overlook like, oh, they're just cranky. They're in a bad mood. That can be a sign of depression in adolescence. You know, changes in appetite. You're eating more, you're eating less. You have nightmares or you can't, you know, you're sleeping way too much or you're sleeping too little. Grades are going downhill. Those are all red flags for some sort of intervention beyond just a parent child. So if that line is crossed, I would probably go and have, you know, the child go to therapy. It is traumatic stress. I mean, you're dealing, yes. And no incident is too small. And that's why I was very hesitant to say with a line, it could be one incident of bullying, but depending on genetic makeup, what else is going on with a kid? If they're already kind of struggling with maybe making friends or something else going on, that one incident may affect them so much more than you would think. There's no threshold of, oh, that's just one. We'll talk about it. It'll blow over. You'll be fine. And especially if they want to talk, like go. Early intervention is better before kind of some of the traumatic stress gets ingrained and sinks in. Because then if you do have repeated events, you have the core event, and now you had this event, and now you have this, and now you're worried about going to school, now you're feeling depressed and you can't eat, and that's how things grow and become so excruciatingly painful, where an adolescent may think, I don't want to be here.
Alex, I love this interaction because you are so insightful and so wise on what to look for. My son's a pastor in California, and a lazy Saturday afternoon heard a shot.
Oh, wow.
And ran next door, and the young teenage son had taken his life in the backyard. And the challenge with that was, you know, the parents didn't really feel like there were warning signs that would have suggested that he was going in that direction, although other students kind of maybe felt that way. In terms of how parents can really keep the pulse of their kids, I love the why question. Are there any other things that you would suggest that, hey, you know, because these kids can become so private. In the case of my son's neighbor, it did come out of the blue. And I'm hearing that more and more with suicides, that there were no indications. Can you help walk me through that kind of thought process? Are there things that we're missing that we should be doing with our kids that we're maybe not?
Yeah. As a parent, you know, and it depends on the age of your child. If we're talking middle school and grade school, there are some, you know, apps, for example, you could put on their phone that would monitor for keywords.
Yeah.
Like self-injury, you know, any violent content, suicidal ideation. It's easier to do when your kids are smaller because, you know, the phone is more of a privilege and you're trying to teach them, right. You know. When they're older, it's trickier because of privacy. You don't want to be completely, you know, but having ongoing conversations, if you notice your teen is on the phone a lot or putting the phone down and then being upset or angry, you know, and asking. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes parents are so afraid of that's the privacy or sort of. Right. Afraid of the reaction of crankiness, which we are going to get, but go for it.
Yeah.
Hey, who was that? Or you, yeah. You just observe. You look upset right after that. Is everything okay? What made you uncomfortable? You're not even asking who said what and tell me the words. You're saying you that made you very uncomfortable. You know, kind of what's going on. Can we talk about it? But being more aware of patterns and their, you know, cell phone use. But if you feel like they are even on the phone at 2 a.m. when they should be sleeping, you know, talk about, do we need to just turn the phone in for the night? How can I help you? This is not good. Right. But, you know, kind of knowing a little bit more about their social media presence, listening to their, you know, children. You kind of mentioned that the friend, your pastor's, the neighbor friend, like the friends may have noticed.
Yeah.
Not that friends would necessarily rat out other right. friends, but don't discount anything you hear.
Right.
Right. Because right. sometimes it happens, people don't want to overtly say anything, but things said in passing or things like, oh, yeah, they're always just little comments. That is a form of communication. So don't discount that. But I would really just look at your kids' behaviors, like if they're gaming and they're on Discord, which the, you know, the chatting and whatever, a lot of bullying could happen with that. But if you notice they're visibly upset or different, just ask about the difference. Again, you don't necessarily, you know, but that may open a gateway to a conversation. And the more you do that, it just becomes normal. And then one day, you know, they may be so comfortable, they may come to you and tell you stuff.
Such wise counsel, because it seems like I watched a family of four come in a restaurant where my wife and I were looking at each other and yeah. talking to each other, and everybody was buried in their phone. And I thought, how is this a family anything? Because yeah. nobody's paying attention to anything yeah. anybody else. So that's exactly. such. Okay. One last question yeah. for you. And thank you. You've been so gracious with your time. The parents, you know, nothing hurts us more than watching our kids suffer.
Absolutely.
What would your words of counsel, encouragement, advice be to parents who are trying to walk this delicate journey and are afraid of what could or is happening? How would you encourage them?
It is a very anxiety-provoking, just, you know, incident or experience for the parents. Absolutely. There's no other anxiety than worrying the quality, like worrying about your child. I would say, don't be afraid of your teens kind of, oh, you're in my privacy reaction, because you never like go for it. Your job as a parent is to protect your child.
That's good.
You might get resistance. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's just say expect resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, not might, expect it. But yeah. your job as the adult
yeah.
and as the protector is to persevere, and right. you don't give up, because, you know, you can't. Right. If your child's mental health is at issue, any child, I mean, if your child got this horrible medical diagnosis, you wouldn't give up. If the child goes, nah, I'm not going to go to that. You're going to, yeah, you are. You're going to yeah. go, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, think of it. This is just, it can be life or death in the same way, or at least injury. But we're talking about psychological injury.
Yeah.
Don't give up then. Don't give up now. You're going to have, you know, fear on their end, resistance, but that's your job to overcome that and say, okay, you could be mad at me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask this anyway, because I yeah. care about you, and come from a position of caring, not that you're going to, ooh,
yeah.
you know, if they see that you're going to march into the school, all their fears are going to, you know, again, not to say you wouldn't do that, but you got to, you know, when you talk
yeah.
to them, you got to yeah. say, let's talk this out. You're yeah. suffering. I don't want you to suffer. Let's see what we can do about this.
Yeah. So good.
And be their ally in this.
I love the phrase, I love you too much to do nothing.
Yes, absolutely. This is it.
That's right. And yeah. and I love that, you know, love covers a lot of things, mm-hmm. you know, and at the end of the day, I can't tell you how many times you can imagine. I was a strong dad And my kids remind me of that all the time, especially when I'm playing with my grandkids. They're like, who are you?
Who are
We've
you?
We've never right? seen you before, you know. But the reality is they've all come back after the fact as adults and now all having children and said, Dad, thank you for staying strong. Thank you for not letting me go here.
Absolutely.
Because that was a train wreck. That would have been a snake pit for me. Thank Absolutely. You for, and so parents, I just want to encourage you as we kind of wrap up here. So much good information here. And again, you may say real security podcast. How does this have to do with security? It has everything
to do
with security because it's the security of your children. It's the security of their lives. And, you know, again, as I've always told you, we really do want to, for these times, bring real experts to the table. And Dr. Tsang, I mean, every time I talk with you, interact, I'm just really encouraged by your passion to help the mentally ill and your efforts. If people wanted to get in contact with you, how would they do that?
I do have a website, and you can email me and message me through that website.
Great.
So it's drtsang.org.
Okay.
So you can, and I believe you had already linked it under the last podcast.
Yes. So
Work on it. That'll take you there. It'll tell you a little bit about me, but also a way to contact me if you need resources, if, you know, you're looking for an evaluation or any type of help. You know, absolutely.
And that's drtsang.org, right?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to put that in the show notes too. But folks, let me just say this. There's none better than Dr. Tsang. I have dealt with, as a Secret Service agent, I've dealt with tons of folks in her profession, and she just has a passion, but also an expertise. I mean, she's the real deal. And so we're so honored. Thank you again for joining us. I think many parents need to hear this information, and we're going to try to get it out there. By the way, folks, if you're new to the channel, please like, subscribe, and share. None of the information matters if people don't see it. So we're trying to grow this organically to get it out there. Again, you'll never hear on this podcast anybody except folks that are truly pedigreed, experienced, and passionate about bringing you the information that we all need for crazy times, because it's getting more and more difficult in our country, whether it's crime or mental health or economics or all the above. And again, I'm not a naysayer, but I'm a realist. And I believe that we shouldn't live in fear. We absolutely should live in wisdom and in preparation. So Dr. Tsang, thank you again. As always, it's an honor. And I look forward to our next. I know we're going to try to I think we're in process to do kind of some reviews of active violence events. And I am thrilled you and my good friend Dave Young, you don't need me, but I'd love to hear what you guys have to.
It
will be. So thank you again. And we will see you again. And in the meantime, please stay safe out there, folks.